This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Round them up and arrest them. That's a directive from the Texas House Republicans who have voted to authorize the House Sergeant-at-Arms to civilly arrest Democrats who left the state rather than vote on a redistricting plan put in place to appease President Trump and hand as many as five new congressional seats to the Republicans in the midterms. The Office of Special Counsel opening an investigation into former Special Counsel Jack Smith.
This is something that was actually a referral from Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican senator from Arkansas, that was sent earlier this week, and the Office of Special Counsel acted remarkably quickly to announce that it was going to carry out this investigation into whether former Special Counsel Jack Smith unlawfully used his office to go after President Trump for political purposes to impact the 2024 election.
That's ABC's Alex Mallon in Washington. Air quality alerts for millions on Monday thanks to the smoke from Canadian wildfires drifting south. This is ABC News.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Fantastic Four, The First Steps, was tops at the box office this past weekend, despite a bigger attendance dip than prognosticators initially thought. The film opened strong with $117 million last weekend, but dropped off by almost 70% to pull in only $40 million this past weekend. According to Variety, that is a sign the film has not connected with audiences beyond superhero fans. The film is sitting at $198 million domestically and cost $200 million to make. Coming in second place was The Bad Guys 2, which brought in just under $23 million. Matching the original film's take on opening weekend in 2022. Audience scores were through the roof, which could mean the film will be in theaters for a while. Landing in third place with $17 million at the gate was the highly anticipated The Naked Gun. The film pulled in another $12 million overseas. Audience scores for this comedy are also strong. Superman and Jurassic World Rebirth rounded out the top five. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A rainy night in Georgia. The Brewers and the Braves playing in the mist. Top of the fourth, two men on. And the Brewers' Isaac Collins at the plate. FanDuel, Wisconsin.
Well, it's 3-2 on Collins. See if they send Yelich. He goes. And a swing and a drive to right field. This is hit a ton. It is gone for Collins. A three-run shot. The Brewers have the lead. Seventh home run of the year for Isaac Collins.
How about this kid, Isaac Collins?
The Brewers held on to win 3-1. Their fourth win in a row, thanks to some great base running. Pat Murphy.
I still chalk it up to we base run, you know what I mean? William taking off 3-2 there. The threat of Yelly sealing there 3-2. Maybe it changed the pitch that they threw Collins. Who knows? But credit to Isaac. You know, he put a great swing on a pitch.
NFL, the Packers' new starting defensive back, Nate Hobbs, out for at least the next 3 weeks after having knee surgery. The team hoping to have him back for the season opener against the Lions. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome photographer and musician Chris Rogowski. And Madison film critic Rob Thomas talks about the box office and upcoming movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
We are going to be dealing with more of that wildfire smoke today. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, clear. We're going to drop down to 63 tomorrow. More sunshine with a high right around 85. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
Matt and Air on Air.
I have a baby bird stuck in a birdhouse.
Its head is
stuck.
Terry on the text line says, if you can detach the birdhouse, bring it to Ace Hardware, they can help get the bird out?
Really? Richard from Waukesha, you get the last word on this.
I like the idea of the Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But some advice is don't let them talk you into a remodeled bathroom.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yes.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll discuss the Trump tariffs. They're off, they're on, they're up, they're down. But what does it mean to us in Wisconsin? We'll be joined by Wisconsin business owner Kyle LaFond on that and also PBS.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
It is looking to be another beautiful day to get some work done here in the great state of Wisconsin. I'm Ben Jarboe joining you on the Midwest Farm Report this morning and for the next few mornings while the team is out covering the state fair and the Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. We will get a detailed forecast for these events in a few minutes with the ever trusty ag meteorologist Stu Muck. Lots of trade news lately, so we will take a look at that and how the markets are moving later in the hour when market advisor John Heinberg from Total Farm Marketing joins the show. As I mentioned, it is the first day of the annual Farm Technology Days that is taking place at Clinton Farms in Bear Creek, and the fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke was able to catch up with Janet Keller. She's the new general manager of the event to share some of her history as well as what can be expected from the show. And although recently we have been getting some smoke from Canadian wildfires, rural fire departments within the state have been working to put out a few of their own. Coming up next, Stephanie Hoff has a chat with EMS Outreach Program Manager James Small with the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health about some growing issues they are having in regards to staffing, funding, and training that could become an issue for public safety. Some hard-hitting things to talk about today, so make sure to stick around.
Rural Mutual Insurance is proud to sponsor the event tent at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, August 5th through the 7th at Clinton Farms in Bear Creek. For nearly a century, Rural Mutual has protected Wisconsin farms and supported rural communities with local insurance agents in every county. Join them at the Rural Mutual Event Center for live music, vendor booths, barbecue demos, and more. They're proud to protect what matters most, your farm, your family, your future. Learn more at ruralmutual.com.
At Chattel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Alarming news from the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. They produced a statewide report. It reveals that fire departments statewide, especially in rural areas, are facing some serious challenges, and it's threatening their ability to respond to emergencies. I'm Stephanie Hoff from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, and we're talking about it today with James Small. James is the Rural EMS Program Manager with the Office of Rural Health. He tells us what exactly is putting local fire departments at risk.
Yeah, so what we found was that just under half of the departments lack the personnel to make a fire response that involves four people and an engine. So the way that's being dealt with is that most of these departments are using mutual aid to fill that gap. And as there's less and less volunteers available, and about 80% of our fire departments in Wisconsin are staffed by volunteers or near volunteers or are paid a small amount to be part of the department. It's put a pretty significant strain on the emergency response infrastructure.
That kind of underlines the importance of volunteers, needing volunteers. Like you said, 85% operate entirely with volunteers. More than half are worried that they won't have staff.
Yes, and that's something that we've been seeing and hearing anecdotally for a long time now. I mean, going back even a couple decades, you've been hearing about the decline of the number of volunteers available to respond to calls and so on. And we saw the same thing in EMS also. We did a similar study a couple of years ago that showed that 41% of our ambulance services weren't responding to calls 24/7, 365. So what we're seeing on both sides is that the EMS system and the firefighting systems that we have in place haven't been supported and need additional support and resources to be able to respond reliably.
Yeah, the people power is one problem. The funding issue is the other. So, I mean, are our fire services, are they seeing increased capital costs?
Well, the cost of capital has gone up exponentially, particularly in the 5 years since the pandemic. It used to be you could buy a new fire engine for $400,000, maybe up to $500,000, let's say like 10 years ago. That same vehicle today is pushing $1 million or more. So that on its face isn't something that you're going to be able to do through fundraisers and things like that. And then on top of that, getting the people in place to staff those apparatus is yet another challenge. Because I think what we've seen with our communities is that a lot of people work outside the communities that they live in, where a few decades ago, there was manufacturers and things like that all over the place that were in the communities and allowed people to leave and go to fires and stuff like that. But when that person's working half an hour or an hour outside the community, that's not realistic anymore.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily that people don't want to volunteer. It might be that it's just not feasible.
Correct. I think that's really one of the drivers. I don't think people are less interested in their community. I think that there's other things that have taken up space in people's lives that are preventing them from being part of a fire department, just as what we see with like the Rotary Clubs and the Lions Clubs and the churches and so on, that there's declining volunteerism. And that's part of a sociological shift that we've had in our country. But that's, you know, in the fire service and EMS, where we've based so much of the response capacity on volunteers, that's where we see a significant impact, because those are sometimes life or death responses that need to be done in a timely manner.
So the survey that was able to outline all the challenges that Wisconsin's fire service is facing, you talked to about 418 fire chiefs around the state, representing more than half of the departments statewide, and they did outline some recommendations, one of which was merging or consolidating fire departments. Now, I imagine that comes with pros and cons.
It's very challenging to do a regionalization for a number of reasons. One is getting the parties to come to agreements and reach consensus on how things would go in a merged department. First, we got to remember that the fire service is a local governmental function. So towns, villages, and cities provide for the service. Now, some of them use like volunteer fire companies. Some of them have their own fire departments and so on. But first and foremost, just getting the municipal leaders together to sit down in a room and come to an agreement can be very challenging on how they want to share services. And then taking those different departments and putting them together, because each one has its own culture. That, you know, some of them have been in place serving their communities for over 100 years at this point. So there's a lot of those logistical challenges pulling them together. And when you put departments together, the time is because they want to hire full-time staff. So it's not cheaper. So the conventional wisdom says we're going to regionalize and it's going to lower cost. It's not going to lower cost. What it's going to do is prevent the increase from being as much by sharing that cost across several municipalities.
So were there other recommendations that were made that maybe when you did this EMS report, they were able to implement some strategies, anything like that you can see working for the fire side?
After the EMS report came out, the legislature was very responsive to some of the recommendations that were in that report. We saw the shared revenue bill that targeted funding into public safety. So your fire, EMS, law enforcement is what could be used, or a portion of what could be used for that increased funding. You saw the funding assistance program, which was increased from $2.2 million to $25 million, and that's to help buy capital equipment and training for EMS providers. We saw that happened right away 2 years ago. There's currently other legislation right now to help with regionalizations of EMS services and so on. So I think that, you know, from a state government perspective, this has been a nonpartisan issue. And it's been something that once the problem has then been better identified with these studies, has been very responsive for trying to create some statewide solutions. But ultimately, this comes down to local governments prioritizing where funding goes and, you know, how much they want to tax the people to provide the level of service that the people want.
You worked in this. So this is something that's close to you.
Yes, I've spent my entire adult life working in public safety. And prior to coming to Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, the last 10 years of my life was spent as a municipal fire chief. So, and these were the challenges that we were facing in smaller communities. I worked in two different communities as a fire chief, had similar challenges in both places because there's not enough money, there's not enough people. Just in the few years that I've been in at the Office of Rural Health, we've seen this increase. I mean, the problem just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's just a significant challenge to work through. The main thing for your listeners is that if they're interested in the fire service or EMS, go down and check it out. Go check out your local department, because everybody's looking for people and everyone's looking for people that can help. And it might not necessarily be as an EMT or as a firefighter. There's lots of other things going on at these departments where they need people to help, whether it's with fundraising. You know, they may have an auxiliary where people can volunteer, things like that. And maybe if the fire service and EMS isn't your thing at all and you don't want to be around it, go find other places to volunteer in your community, because that's what we need right now. And that's how we build our strong communities that we've had historically in Wisconsin.
James Small along with us. He's the Rural EMS Program Manager with the Office of Rural Health. The office just released a report that says Wisconsin Fire Service is under significant strain and is struggling to provide essential response capabilities across many communities. It's due to a declining volunteer workforce and a significant increase in capital costs. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. We're exploring redistricting this week, including its cheating side. By manipulating which voters are in a voting district, the party in power can rig the system to guarantee a win for that party. Ronald Reagan called it the anti-democratic and un-American practice of gerrymandering. Gerrymandering was named for Elbridge Gerry, Massachusetts governor and signer of the Declaration of Independence, who approved an 1812 partisan map resembling a salamander. Partisan legislatures still pack members of their own party into snake-like districts to create safe seats and protect incumbents, or crack a district which leans to the opposing party and dilute its power by adding friendly voters. Gerrymandering flies in the face of the American ideal of competition. Safe seat incumbents don't have to work as hard to get elected because once they win the primary, they're a shoo-in to win the general. It suppresses competition between parties and new candidates whose ideas might benefit constituents. Primaries become a race to the bottom as candidates cater to hardcore, more extreme party primary voters and ignore centrist voters and independents. The lack of competition also suppresses turnout as voters say, "Why should I bother? It's already decided." There's an even more insidious form of gerrymandering, racial gerrymandering. We have more on that tomorrow. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE. Maggie Dawn.
Well, I'm off enjoying the sights and sounds of some of my favorite places in Wisconsin. Guest hosts are stepping in with sharp insights into Wisconsin politics and beyond. Don't miss these great conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Noon today,
And we know that means that smoke's not magically going to go away this afternoon. There still will be some smokiness around. And if you're working outdoors, I think almost everybody now has seemed to notice that smoke is a little more of an issue than you may have thought of. And if you're heading off to Bear Creek for Farm Technology Days, it's going to be a warm and smoky day there as well. But good news for that three-day show. I don't have a major storm lining up. I don't expect we're suddenly going to break out into heat indexes that push up to 100 degrees or anything, but it is going to warm up. In fact, heading back to normal and a little above in the next couple of days, some rain chance may show up at the Farm Technology grounds Wednesday night or into the day Thursday. Scattered hit or miss type showers are what I expect. Like we see this morning, some very scattered light rain just in far northwest Wisconsin, up into northern Minnesota, the UP as well. None of it really amounting to much at this time, but a little rain off in the north. That's about where it stays today. My expectation is as we look on toward Wednesday night, that chance of rain will expand from northwest to southeast, probably not showing up as a chance of rain in far southeast Wisconsin until later Thursday, or at least into the day, and even then, not much of a chance. What we're seeing is very mild and moist air building up out of the south, kind of a stationary front up over Lake Superior through the Great Lakes, if you will. And as that mild, moist air builds in, it creates what we call instability in the atmosphere. Eventually, we'll provide a little bit of rainfall. Like I'm saying, that chance in southern Wisconsin, very small for Thursday. The bigger word, temperatures get even warmer. I expect those temps to rise up into the upper 80s or even around 90 on Friday, the hot day of the week. And we only cool it off a couple of degrees for the weekend, but it still sounds very summery with that warm air. You know the humidity builds in as well. So we are going to have some very summery conditions here on toward the end of the week and possibly some rain chance. That chance of rain may be getting a bit greater for us as we head towards Saturday night or into Sunday. Let's hope we could get a little shower. I know a lot of weekend activities are planned. But by the time we make our way on toward this weekend after some hot air, things could seem a little dry and parched. Maybe a shower wouldn't be the worst of news. So there's all kinds of news to share. Number one is the smoky skies. And number two, that chance of rain slowly trying to build in. Not very widespread. I don't expect a great deal of storminess, but there could be some shower activity at least trying to move in as we move into the latter part of the week. I'll have those forecast details right after this.
Join our friends from Wisconsin Farmers Union in Booth 607 and Midwest Farm Report at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days on Wednesday, August 6th at 2 p.m. Wisconsin Farmers Union is united to grow family agriculture. Visit wisconsinfarmersunion.com to learn more.
This year's Farm Technology Days is celebrating generations of progress August 5th through the 7th at Clinton Farms in Bear Creek, Wisconsin. This year's show takes a glimpse into the future of agriculture with technology and technique. Visit wifarmtechdays.org for a full schedule of events.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Well, Sue, the rest of the team is over there in West Dallas for the Century and Sesquicentennial Farm Breakfast. So it sounds like they might expect some decent weather for that.
Oh, I'd say a real nice day at West Dallas at the fairgrounds. Going to be a fine day in Bear Creek as well. Again, the air quality advisory in effect until noon today statewide. Smoky skies, you'll probably see it as our sun comes up a bit more. I'm anticipating temps today, at least in the very upper 70s in northern Wisconsin, low 80s elsewhere, and winds will become more east, about 5 to 10. Some smoke around tonight. There may be a little rain in far northwest Wisconsin, looking up to Park Falls and Hayward. I expect overnight lows in the upper 50s or very low 60s with east breezes. Mostly sunny with smoke again tomorrow. Some of that rain chance could spread a bit further south in northwest Wisconsin, Eau Claire, maybe even Wausau late Wednesday. Not expect temps in the low and mid 80s on Wednesday. And by Thursday, partly sunny again up into the mid 80s. That chance, a very small chance of a scattered shower or storm around Thursday. And Ben, then we get back to sun and hot for Friday, when the upper 80s or 90s are going to be seen.
Well, I know we're talking a little bit off air, and I was kind of hoping it would stay a little bit cooler still. I'm going up to the Northwoods this weekend for a little bit of fishing, but it sounds like that's not going to happen.
Going to be a little warm, and I bet it'll be smoky.
Yeah, I know my uncle's already up there, and he was saying it's been a little smoky out there on the lake.
Yeah, I believe it. And it's been all over for a while this year, and it's just not going to clear out overnight, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining me this morning, Stu. That was Stu Muck, ag meteorologist. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Mid.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of the Maggie Dawn Show, where she talks with UW-Madison's Dr. Chuck Nicholson.
Let's talk about the labor market and sort of like the 1-2 punch that is affecting the agricultural industry, specifically farmers and dairy farmers here in Wisconsin. Not only do you have this chaos, this uncertainty, this much higher expense, much lower appetite from the people that we sell our dairy products to buy them because it is reciprocal tariffs, hence a trade war is what it's called. We have that punch, and we have this 1-2 punch coming from the Trump administration. Frankly, looking at worker shortages this summer, potentially. We're looking at these massive cuts to the Supplemental Nutritional and Food Assistance Program, or Emergency Food Assistance, SNAP, where farmers in Door County and in every county in Wisconsin where there are farmers would sell directly into places that were providing school lunches. Those programs are being gutted. Is this really kind of a perfect storm that Donald Trump has created for farmers?
So we have the possibility you mentioned of lower prices because we can't sell as much of our product outside of the U.S. We have the, and actually through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, we actually sell a fair amount of dairy products through those kinds of food and nutrition programs, including the school lunch and school breakfast programs. And then we have the possibility of increased costs for equipment and some other inputs. And then we also have the possibility of both labor shortage and higher wage costs related to immigration policy. So if you kind of put that together, the package is not a sort of a rosy picture. In any situation that you can think of, we may have lower prices, we may have higher input costs. Those are things that have a direct impact on the margins for dairy farmers and other farmers in the state. And actually, we could say the same thing related to higher input costs and lower market prices for dairy processors, the folks who bake cheese and put it in the packages and take it to the grocery store or take it to your local pizza restaurant. So the combination of these things is not working favorably. I guess one of the things that I kind of like to point out to people is that the policies that we have in place are really more kind of collateral damage when we think about what's going on with agriculture. They're not designed to address problems in agriculture really specifically. They're not designed to help policies in agriculture. They're designed to affect kind of these bigger macro and global politics type power type issues. And so agriculture is not kind of in the driver's seat when it comes to thinking about how they're going to be affected by the various policies that are being discussed right now.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Round them up and arrest them. That's a directive from the Texas House Republicans who have voted to authorize the House Sergeant-at-Arms to civilly arrest Democrats who left the state rather than vote on a redistricting plan put in place to appease President Trump and hand as many as 5 new congressional seats to the Republicans in the midterms. The Office of Special Counsel opening an investigation into former Special Counsel Jack Smith.
This is something that was actually a referral from Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican senator from Arkansas, that was sent earlier this week, and the Office of Special Counsel acted remarkably quickly to announce that it was going to carry out this investigation into whether former Special Counsel Jack Smith unlawfully used his office to go after President Trump for political purposes to impact the 2024 election.
That's ABC's Alex Malin in Washington. Air quality alerts for millions on Monday thanks to the smoke from Canadian wildfires drifting south. This is ABC News.
The Brewers win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A rainy night in Georgia, the Brewers and the Braves playing in the mist. Top of the fourth, two men on, and the Brewers' Isaac Collins at the plate. FanDuel Wisconsin.
Well, 3-2 on Collins. See if they send Yelich. He goes, and a swing and a drive to right field. This is hit a ton. It is gone for Collins. A three-run shot. The Brewers have the lead. Seventh home run of the year for Isaac Collins.
How about this kid, Isaac Collins?
The Brewers held on to win 3-1. Their fourth win in a row, thanks to some great base running. Pat Murphy.
I still chalk it up to we base run, you know what I mean? William taking off 3-2 there. The threat of Yelly sealing there 3-2. Maybe it changed the pitch that they threw Collins. Who knows? But credit to Isaac. You know, he put a great swing on a pitch.
NFL, the Packers' new starting defensive back, Nate Hobbs, out for at least the next 3 weeks after having knee surgery. The team hoping to have him back for the season opener against the Lions. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Jay Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, our friend and colleague Todd Alba joins us after 9:30 to break down the news in Wisconsin. Terry Barr in hour number two for Audio Sorbet. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
We are going to be dealing with more of that wildfire smoke today. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, clear. We're going to drop down to 63 tomorrow. More sunshine with a high right around 85. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Mattenair on air.
Here's my gripe. MTV made it possible for really subpar performers to become stars. Madonna would never have been a star if it hadn't been for MTV and her grinding her way across the floor in a wedding dress.
See, that's where I think your gripe isn't with MTV. I think your gripe is with Madonna grinding on MTV.
Thank you, Matt from Richland Center. How dare you, Jane?
Mattenair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent segment of the Maggie Dawn Show about a proposed bill that would affect local farmers.
Folks, if you're just joining us, I'm joined this half hour by Senator Brad Pfaff of the 32nd State Senate District. He has introduced three key pieces of legislation this cycle to help support Wisconsin farmers and families. Let's talk a little bit about a few of the bills that you've introduced this year. I want to start with the most recent one because it's so incredibly important in light of what's going on federally. It is the Agricultural Purchase Program. Tell folks a little bit about it.
I did introduce legislation that, again, links consumers with our family farmers. It recognizes that this piece of legislation that was jammed through Congress last week is going to have an impact, and I would say a negative impact, on too many individuals that through no fault of their own are seeking food assistance at different times in their life. And so what this piece of legislation does is very simple. It provides grants to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, and then the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture would work with local food organizations in order to provide financial assistance. And those local food organizations then would contract directly with local farmers to receive the bring in the food that they seek. May it be meats, may it be milk, may it be cheeses, may it be maple syrup, whatever it may be. And so, again, it is trying to broaden out the supply chain as far as with agriculture. And at the same time, it's linking family farmers with consumers. And I think that is so very important. And what it's also doing is it recognizes during when there are challenges and dips in the marketplace and people are down on their luck, that we're just not throwing people to the street. We're recognizing the fact in a wealthy nation and a state like Wisconsin that grows food, we want to make sure that we can feed our neighbors.
People, because we have been rightly focused on the big brutal bill, as well as the state's biennial budget, people forget that one of the first things that Donald Trump did was cut all kinds of aid programs willy-nilly through executive orders. And it ended up immediately hurting Wisconsin farmers because we literally had food rotting in storage houses, not getting to the people that need the food. This most recent bill is called the Agricultural Purchase Program. It's a bill to establish a $30 million fund within the Department of Agriculture, again, to make sure that families in need of emergency food assistance in the state get it and that they get that food assistance from our family farms.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report, everybody. I'm Ben Jarbo joining you this morning. And as Stu was saying earlier, it is looking like it is going to be a nice day out there. So if you had the day off work and are heading up the lake, it looks like it may end up being a pretty good day for catching some fish. These fish should be used to this a little bit lower temperature by now and are looking to be feeding again coming up into the shallows. And if you are heading out there, I would be aiming for those weed beds, going around those weed beds, try punching some jigs in there. Throw a little topwater in the mornings if you want to try that. Like this morning, if you want to try some topwater, go for it. I think that could end up being pretty good. Throwing a frog, maybe a whopper plopper, you know, buzz bait, one of those kind of things. Something to really get them to blow up on there. You can also hit some points with those sudden drop-offs, like I mentioned earlier, because those smallmouths are going to be a little deeper still. So down there, I throw some Ned rigs and that kind of thing. You can even try a deep diving crankbait just in case something is moving. But those would be the places I would for sure hit. You can go under docks if you want to try for some largemouth and toss some creature baits and those kind of things in there. I would also suggest maybe a plastic paddle tail swim bait. That's one of my favorite summer baits just because they're pretty versatile. You can control the depth. You can control the speed. They're always going to have a good action on them. So I would try one of those as well, whether you're going for bass, even pike. I mean, really anything. That it's just a great bait to be tossing around. And since it is a beautiful day to fish, it is also a beautiful day to hit up the Wisconsin Farm Technology Days up in Bear Creek. Now let's take a listen in with Fibulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke while she has a chat with the new general manager of the Farm Tech Days, Janet Keller.
At first blush, you might not even notice the change, but it's a big one. A new manager for Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. I'm Pam Yonke. Janet Keller took over the reins of Wisconsin Farm Technology Days officially in 2025. That means Clinton Farms and Bear Creek, Wisconsin will be her first show acting as general manager. But Keller tells me she's certainly no stranger to the show itself.
I have. I used to be an exhibitor every year when I was with another genetics company and always appreciated the breadth and scope of this show and wanted to be part of it. And later on, I was actually on the state board of directors. And so I did appreciate the background and the actual management side of things, too. And so when Anna and Chuck Maynor reached out to me as they were starting to want to look at retirement, I was happy to talk to them about the opportunity.
Now, we know that we're headed to central Wisconsin, Waupaca area, and Clinton Farms. That's another slice of history for the show. Man, oh man, third time a charm for this family.
Absolutely, and they generously offered the use of their wonderful progressive dairy farm. A lot of changes have happened in the three generations that we've been associated with them, and including right now, probably one of the most exciting things is the 800 cow rotary parlor, but also all the wonderful cow and heifer comfort facets of this farm are wonderful to see.
Now let's talk about some of the things that people should expect when they get here. Like we said, it is one fantastic dairy operation. The footprint of the show, is it changing at all, Janet? What might we notice
Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just a different look.
Yeah, every year provides new logistical challenges, but opportunities as well. And so depending on the site, this year we're really blessed to have a very flat field to the west of the parlor and farmstead itself. So it lends itself very nicely to not only the tent city for the exhibits that are set up, but also the field demonstrations. Yeah, and so we're going to have some exciting field demonstrations going on that are unique to this area.
Well, and that's something I don't want to overlook. Aside from things like tiling, which is not something you see on every Farm Technology Day to-do list, there are going to be field demonstrations. You mentioned locally, because some of the equipment dealers have some specific elements they want to focus on.
Absolutely. And so sometimes our equipment is brand new, state of the art, that they want to, you know, feature and possibly sell to farmers. But we also might have some farm equipment that's been around or techniques in the tillage and the hay harvesting equipment that are just something that, you know, we have to keep in mind. We have new generations growing up in farming. We have to provide the same educational opportunities and technique sharing with them as well.
Well, and let's face it, affordability, too. All that brand new paint comes at a cost to the dealership, as well as potentially those people that are looking at it. This is a nice little change up for both the dealers locally as well as those that might be in the market.
Absolutely. And we don't always want to just focus on large operations, because certainly our industry has changed drastically. I'm old enough, Pam, you know me. I've been around the block, and I'm old enough to remember that it takes all types of dairies. There are a lot of smaller acreage operations, smaller animal unit operations, and we want to make sure we have something for all of them to see and witness and perhaps adapt back home.
Again, Clinton Farm is going to be your host in Wapaka County, Bear Creek, if you know the vicinity for the show. Again, it's an August show. Normally we would think of wheat as the item that is front and center. Little tentative on that.
Right, and because of the timing of the show this year, we do have winter wheat staged, but it may end up, depending on how many heat units we got coming at us the next few days, we may end up harvesting before the show. So we might instead focus on the tillage, the hay harvest, and the tiling.
But there still, again, will be field demonstrations, will give you an opportunity to see iron moving. You know, the other thing that I'm really happy to see, Janet, is you've already got a location for 2026.
We do. Next year we'll be at Stratford, Wisconsin, and we'll be at the Radetzky No Joke Dairy, which is a really interesting story. So unlike this particular operation in 2025, next year's site is also two brothers, but they're young with family, and they're actually people that went out in the working world for a while.
Yep.
And came back. They desired to be in the dairy industry and be dairy owners, and they started their own operation. So it's a wonderful story for some of our younger people to admire and idolize.
And they're also second time around.
They are, yeah. They're just a really nice family. We've got a great committee pulled together working feverishly on that. I just had my last meeting about a week ago up there in Stratford, and now we'll wait until we're done with this year's show. I have to take a little bit of a breath and get some tickets sent out and such for this year's show, but it'll happen.
Yeah, and that's something that people should understand also. You and the board have decided that you are going to specifically focus in on dairy in the future.
We are. We think that's, you know, obviously we're in the heart of dairy here in Wisconsin. That's what our main infrastructure is built around. Most of our research, our university system, as well as our technical school system, features a lot of dairy-related learning and research and techniques and new ways of thinking about how to tackle the issues on the farm. And so we think that's where the most opportunity for growth and thriving into the future for this show is.
That's right. Let's not forget about the enjoyment, the camaraderie of reconnecting with friends. Janet Keller, the new general manager of Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, August 5th through the 7th, Clinton Farms in Bear Creek. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Pam Yonke.
Thank you, Pam. And be sure to stick around, because coming up next, Kylie Allen talks with the 2025 Fairs of the Fair, Megan Solentine, and we take a look at the markets.
Where does the mint for your toothpaste come from? Here in Wisconsin, of course. Welcome back as we highlight specialty crops across the state and the people who grow them. Today, we're heading to Rock County to visit with Trip Downing at Still Harvest Farm. This is a peppermint farm and processing operation south of Janesville. Trip says getting involved in a specialty crop has been rewarding.
I really enjoy the just being different. And, you know, we have a lot of people that stop in and check out what we're doing, and being able to be part of kind of a niche market here. There's very few people in the United States or North America in general that grow peppermint. So just being able to be a part of a group like that is, it's pretty neat.
Trip Downing along with us from Still Harvest Farm. He says the mint also keeps him busy during the slower months of summer when he doesn't have field work to do with his corn and soybeans. The peppermint harvest is going on now. Learn more at gowiagtourism.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Now let's take a listen in to Kylie Allen and Megan Solentine. Take it away, Kylie.
I'm Kylie Allen from the Midwest Farm Report here at the Wisconsin State Fair. I'm here with a pretty special person. You want to tell us who you are?
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Solentine, the 2025 Wisconsin Fair. So the fair is from Kewaunee County.
And my understanding is that you've had a pretty busy summer. Where have you been?
All over the state, really. I've knocked out 29 fairs on my calendar throughout the summer. I visit most of the county, district, and state fairs in the state of Wisconsin, but I'll be here for the next 11 days.
And your goal is to hit how many out of the fairs?
Just over 50 by the time the summer wraps up and fairs wrap up.
Have you had time to be home at all?
Sort of. So I'm living out of a suitcase right now, but truly so blessed to be visiting and stepping into fair communities, promoting the people, passion, and purpose behind the Wisconsin fair industry.
Well, we are all excited about the Wisconsin State Fair here at the Midwest Farm Report team. Hopefully we'll see you around. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Kylie Allen.
Thank you, Kylie. Now, let's see how the markets are moving this morning. Cash corn down 2.25 at 384.75, and new crop corn down 2.5 at 404.5. Cash soybeans are seeing a 1¼ rise at 976.5, and new crop soybeans are seeing 1¾ cents of a rise at 996.25. September wheat contracts are down 2 cents at 514.75. Class 3 milk is seeing some slight gains with September contracts up 7 cents at 1818 weight, and October contracts up 8 cents at 1850 weight. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a deeper dive into the markets next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Experience Northern Wisconsin this season and book your vacation at Lena's Northern Pines Resort on beautiful Butternut Lake in Butternut, Wisconsin. This quaint resort has it all. A full-service resort and restaurant, open year-round for all your seasons, from ATVing to snowmobiling, grouse hunting, deer hunting, and even ice fishing. Or just come to relax with the whole family. And there's also an event space for that perfect occasion that you might be celebrating. Butternut Lake is a 1,000-plus acre Class A musky lake, along with walleye, crappie, perch, and panfish that the kids love to catch. It's perfect for escaping the hustle and bustle of the city. Check your next adventure out today. Go to northernpines.net. www.northernpines.net.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
NFL Hall of Famer, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Joe Thomas. You were telling us a little bit about being drafted number 3. You skipped the draft.
I went fishing that day, and I never did it for anything other than I just much rather spend the day fishing with my dad, and I'm hoping that that's a story that keeps being told and gives people a reason. Like, you know what, instead of working today, I'm going to go fishing with my kid. I'm going to make the time because it's impactful. It's memories that they're going to remember for the rest of their life.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app. News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome photographer and musician Chris Rogowski. And Madison film critic Rob Thomas talks about the box office and upcoming movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
81% good to excellent. We got a good, great crop going here, at least in terms of how it looks at this time frame, just from talking to producers around the state. They keep echoing that sentiment. Soybean 69% good to excellent, kind of in line with what the market was thinking. Again, Wisconsin soybeans 81% good to excellent. So as we're getting into, you know, those key stages here, we're wrapping up pollination on corn. We're getting into the pod set and pod pollination set on soybeans. You know, now the weather will be very, very key in terms of getting this crop developed. Looks like things are going to be a little warm, but nothing excessive coming. But the moisture level, which is still going to be the key, looks like we're going to stay above normal in rainfall for the next 6-10 days, near normal after that going into the end of August. So right now there's not a lot of threats in this market in terms of this crop getting put together. And that's something we got to really keep an eye on going forward. Next week we got our USDA report for August, and that's going to be the first time the USDA will make an adjustment on yield for corn. Soybeans, they may wait till September. They may make a small adjustment based off of ratings here. We'll see how that goes. But corn yield is going to be a big question mark. We had another one of the large analyst firms come out using their crop ratings and satellite imagery, because that's kind of what the USDA is going to use here. Producer survey, satellite imagery. They actually pegged national corn yield at a whopping 188 bushels per acre. So if that's realized, we're going to have a lot of corn out there. And I think that's a little high. Maybe we get a number that's excessive on that report in August, but then things might start working a little lower from there just because of how things finish up and dry down. So, but the crops are in great shape right now. The market's unfortunately reflecting that, at least in terms of prices. Corn broke the new lows again this morning, still holding below those new lows on that December contract.
And I mean, corn, that's moving lower, but I mean, it's not all bad when it's because it's a good crop. But if we look at soybeans, I mean, I saw something where we're at a 20-year low in exports. What are those markets telling you?
Yeah, soybean market's a bit of a concern to me right now because of that global export pace and what's happening on the global scale in terms of the amount of soybeans. Now, corn, just to touch on that real quickly, one of the best round of exports for new crop sales. U.S. corn, even though we've got such a big crop here, is still very, very competitive on the global scale. And we've been selling a lot of new crop corn the last handful of weeks, and that's maybe something that's kind of maybe slowed this market. But unfortunately, I think just the size of the crop may finally start weighing here as we move through August. Soybeans, different story. Obviously, we got this monstrous Brazil crop. We got a very good crop in Argentina. They've lowered some of their export taxes to keep them very competitive in the export market. And U.S. beans are not getting sold for the new year. China has not stepped into the markets, and this is actually getting historically late for that. The biggest concern for me right now is, does China come in and buy? I think they will. They will come in and buy, but it may be a very short window. It just feels like they're trying to get by without using U.S. beans. They won't be able to, but they those purchases may be a little less than the market really anticipates. And that could be with the potential of a big crop. That same company put out a national yield at 53 plus on that bean crop. That would just balloon the balance sheet and make bean prices heavy. Right now, it just feels like the market needs that demand, and it's going to continue to push prices lower, even though we got a little bit of a bounce here these last couple of days. But they want to push prices lower to get that demand to trigger. So we'll see. August is typically a month that we see some bottoming action in some of these grains. We'll have to see how that plays out this year. But with this big crop, it might have a pretty long tail for both corn and soybeans into the fall.
And if we look a little bit at that recently, the August 1st deadline for the tariffs came and passed, with some raising, some being pushed back, some going lower. Is that any of that going to affect this?
You know, realistically, especially in the soybean side, I don't even think the trade war and the tariffs and those things are an issue. The Chinese buy beans, and they buy beans for value. And right now, the U.S. bean is not at a value. Last week, we were about 70 cents a bushel above Brazil here for those key fall months when we sell our beans. Now, after last week's 30-cent drop, we're probably more in that 40, 50 cents a bushel ahead of those Brazilian beans to be competitive. Doesn't mean we're going to go down to that level, but it means we got maybe some more room to fall here. So, you know, obviously the tariff thing, getting the China deal, will be one of the biggest keys going forward if there's something put together that actually has some purchases tied to it. But right now, I don't think that's even a factor here. It's just large global supply and the amount of competition that's out there for those global beans.
And about a minute here, the beef prices are on the other side of that. They're going higher and higher. What's the reasoning behind that? What are you seeing?
Well, we just saw some stats over the night that U.S. ground beef to the retail consumer is actually hitting its historic highs this last week. Some of that might be tied to a little bit of tariff play. We did put a 50% tariff on Brazilian imports, and we import a lot of beef from Brazil. That usually goes into trim. So that may be one of the reasons why the hamburger price is going higher. Trim obviously is the ground beef that we see that hits stores and restaurants. So we'll have to really watch that going forward in terms of that cattle market. Just the supplies of cattle are not out there, and that's going to be something that keeps prices elevated.
Well, any final thoughts here in the last 20 seconds before I let you go that you think we should be keeping an eye on?
You know, for producers, stay active in the markets. There's going to be a lot of bushels moving this fall, so make sure you're getting your plans together now for especially the bushels that you got to move this fall.
All right, John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing joining us out of West Bend. If you have any questions, make sure you go and visit TotalFarmMarketing.com. Signing off, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Matt Nair on air.
I have a baby bird stuck in a birdhouse.
Its head is stuck.
Terry on the text line says, if you can detach the birdhouse, bring it to Ace Hardware, they can help get the bird out?
Really? Richard from Waukesha, you get the last word on this.
I like the idea of the Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But some advice is don't let them talk you into a remodeled bathroom.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Suggestions for building a resilient rural America today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Sochil Torres-Small has the cred to speak about how rural America can be more resilient. She's a former member of Congress and also served as Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
It takes knowledge on the ground. We have to listen to farmers and community. We have to invest in research that will make sense for farmers to apply in the future. We have to recognize innovations and ideas, and we have to support as farmers look to plan and diversify so that they can take a risk that will turn into opportunities for themselves, for rural people, and for places across our country.
Torres Small was among panelists in a recent Farm Foundation webinar on reviving rural America and says agriculture has been responsive to the challenges it faces.
I feel inspired by the continuing work that's happening in rural places and hopeful that there can be support for that through real intentionality in that diversification of production and the recognition that different types of operations will help build that resilience.
Torres Small called for continued support from the public for rural Americans.
When we invest in rural people, when we invest in their solutions, there's no better source of hope.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll discuss the Trump tariffs. They're off, they're on, they're up, they're down. But what does it mean to us in Wisconsin? We'll be joined by Wisconsin business owner Kyle LaFond on that and also PBS.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. It's School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
News. I'm Sherry Preston. House Republicans in Texas have voted to authorize the sergeant-at-arms to arrest Democratic lawmakers who have left the state in protest of new GOP redistricting efforts in Texas. ABC's Jessica Willey.
In this dramatic fight over redistricting, DPS has been ordered to locate, arrest, and bring back any fleeing lawmakers to the House chamber. Governor Greg Abbott also wants them investigated for possible criminal violations, possibly bribery, he says, suggesting that they are being paid to break quorum.
Republicans plan to shift the state's congressional map to give the GOP as many as 5 more seats in the midterms. Dozens of Palestinians were killed or wounded Monday at food distribution points and trying to get to airdropped parcels in Gaza. Aid groups say Israel's week-old measures to allow more aid in isn't enough. A major wildfire threatening hundreds of homes in Central California. This is ABC News.
We bring